back to Shattering Myths. Let's continue to shatter myths. SRN, Salem Radio Network, and their news agency are pathetic. I mean, they're reporting on the marijuana story with Justice Stevens. No, Justice Stevens was appointed, I believe, by a Republican president. And, of course, he turned out to be a flaming liberal. He stated that, in his opinion, and been looking at history, knowing the subject, that America should legalize marijuana. He's right. And he cited the how ineffective and how all the problems associated with prohibition and how that was not the right call. And SRN News, of course, then says what addiction authorities and experts would differ with him on these conclusions. There is no evidence that marijuana is addictive. I mean, cigarettes are legal. They're addictive. But there's no evidence that marijuana is an addictive substance. Now, what is it with SRN? Why can't they just simply do a job of being a news reporting agency as opposed to evangelists for their constituents? It is just sad. Speaking of disappointing, controversial, it says here, this is CNN, New York Police Department surveillance unit that cataloged information from Muslim communities has been disbanded. Because, of course, we don't want to associate Islamic terrorism with Muslims. That would be senseless to, of course, associate those who cause 99.9% of the terrorist acts in the world today with the religion of 100% of those that are committing 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts. The New York Police Department's Demographics Unit, or Zone Assessment Unit, was developed with the CIA's help after September 11, 2001. The unit has acknowledged that it has engaged in monitoring that included Muslim-owned businesses and mosques, of course, across the New York area, and has been the target of controversy and lawsuits. You know, simply profiling is just not legal in America because America now has the moral code of its national religion, political correctness. And political correctness requires you to be irrational. The Zone Assessment Unit, previously referred to as the Demographics Unit, has been largely inactive since January, the department said in a statement Tuesday. Recently, as part of an ongoing assessment of Intelligence Bureau operations, personnel assigned to the Zone Assessment Unit were reassigned to other duties within the Intelligence Bureau. How can you be intelligent if you can't make connections? I mean, there are connections that are difficult to make, that we make routinely. But here's a connection between the realization that the most fundamentalist Muslims are the most likely to be terrorists, and that 99.9% of the terrorist acts perpetrated in the world today are done, committed by fundamentalist Muslims. It's irrefutable. If you were to remove Islam as a motivation for terrorism, you would diminish terrorism by 99%. Just the fact. You know, there were no Protestants aboard the airplanes that were used as suicide bombers on 9/11. There were no Roman Catholics. Well, there are Protestants aboard and the Roman Catholics aboard, but not as terrorists, as victims, not as perpetrators. There were no atheists flying those planes into our buildings. It is stunning that we would capitulate to the national religion of America, socialist secular humanism, and to political correctness to avoid being rational. But when you cease being rational, folks, you cease being moral. You cease being sane. The statement continued, understanding certain local demographics can be a useful factor when assessing information regarding potential threats coming to the attention of the New York Police Department, but it has been determined that much of the same information previously gathered by the Zone Assessment Unit may be attained through direct outreach by the New York Police Department to the communities concerned. Oh, yeah, let's go to the mosque. Worked really well in Boston. Let's go to the mosque. Let's talk to the imam and say, hey, imam, got any terrorists here? Or we'll just wait for them to blow up pressure cooker bombs and maim hundreds of people and have the imam tell you, well, yeah, he attended here, but, you know, we didn't inspire him to do these kinds of things. We disown him. That really helped, didn't it? Two advocacy groups filed a lawsuit challenging the unit and its activities, and they said, of course, they were pleased that it was disbanded. While we welcome the dismantling of the demographics unit as a long overdue step towards reining in the unconstitutional excesses of the New York Police Department, what has to stop is the practice of suspicionless surveillance of Muslim communities, not just the unit assigned to it. We will continue to work through litigation and advocacy to ensure the New York Police Department is fully and finally respecting the rights of the Muslim community. If you don't want to be suspected for terrorism, stop perpetrating 99.9% of the terrorist acts. It's really a very simple thing. You know, when Obama had a conniption fit over Trayvon Martin and said he could have been Trayvon Martin, and it's unfair that as a black man, that if he were to go into a shopping mall looking like Trayvon Martin, that there would be those who would clench their purses more tightly. Well, you know, if African-American men didn't perpetrate crimes at a rate that is 8 to 10 times greater than other ethnic groups, then there wouldn't be the tendency of other ethnic groups to clinch their purses and wallets. I mean, if you don't commit a disproportionate amount of crime, then people aren't going to perceive the likelihood of you being a criminal. If you don't perpetrate 99% of the terrorist acts, in fact, if you don't precipitate any of them and others do, then you're not going to be suspected. I mean, clean up your own house and then cast aspersions. Sad. We just absolutely lost the ability to be rational. Speaking of stupid and irrational, three more Americans were killed this week in Kabul, Afghanistan, in a hospital funded by a U.S. Christian charity. One of the Afghani police security forces officer came in and decided that we ought to gun down Americans, and he started killing doctors. And so three American doctors who were there trying to heal Afghanis were murdered. Yeah, we've made Afghanistan a much better place, haven't we? Oh, by the way, those three doctors' lives won't be counted on the list of Americans killed in Afghanistan because we only keep track of soldiers who were killed. Similar story is regarding the FBI. I have shared on this program for a long period of time that the FBI has and the CIA now they used to have or were supposed to have national versus international territory. That the CIA was the external force and the FBI was internal. But after 9/11, those distinctions have been completely blurred. And the FBI is as likely to involve itself on an external matters as internal to the U.S. and the CIA as well. That's why the Department of Homeland Security has really become an extension of the Department of Defense. Now, the thing that I've told you about the FBI and the CIA is that they don't have actual operatives in the field. The CIA operates out of the U.S. Embassy throughout the world. They're really an extension of the U.S. State Department. We don't have CIA operatives embedded in Islamic terrorist organizations. Now, what we do is we try to bribe them. We take people that we think might be good Muslims, and we coerce them and bribe them to rat out those who are good Muslims. And it never works. Even when we get a Muslim to accept our money and pay them lavishly, they turn most of the money over to the various terrorist organizations that we're trying to learn something about, and only provide enough information to continue to keep the gravy train going. Well, here's an example of that. Awais Sajid is a permanent U.S. resident living in the New York area. He learned, however, that he was on a no-fly list in September of 2012 after he tried to board a plane to Pakistan at the JFK airport in New York. At the airport, FBI agents questioned Sajid, who is a Muslim, before releasing him. But later they returned with another officer. And in exchange for working for them, the FBI said that they would provide Sajid with U.S. citizenship, and they would pay him. The FBI agents reminded Sajid that they also had the power to decide whether or not he would remain on the no-fly list. So they went to this fellow, who, as far as I know, has no links to terrorism, although he was flying to the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world, Pakistan. And they said, you're on the no-fly list. We determine who's on the no-fly list. We're going to keep you on the no-fly list unless you capitulate. If you agree, we are bribing you with citizenship and with compensation. Wow. He refused. The FBI agents kept him on the list in order to pressure him and to coerce him to sacrifice what is literally his constitutionally protected rights, although they really aren't constitutionally protected when he's not a citizen. But according to a lawsuit that was filed in federal court in New York, the lawsuit filed on behalf of Sajid and three other men accuses the United States of violating their rights by placing them on a no-fly list after they declined to spy on local Muslim communities in the New York, New Jersey, and Nebraska areas. The no-fly list is supported. It's supposed to be about ensuring aviation safety, but the FBI, according to those filing the lawsuit, is using it to force people to become informants. The practice borders on extortion. No, it doesn't border on extortion. It is extortion. One perpetrated by the U.S. government. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's amazing that the President of the United States and his administration continues to take credit for reviving the U.S. economy, when in fact the recession was caused by manipulation of home loans by the U.S. government, and then the bundling of home loans approved by the U.S. government. And yet we find that the sales of new U.S. single-family homes tumbled to their lowest level in 8 months this past March. Now, of course, the Reuters report says dashing hopes for a quick turnaround for a sector that fell into a soft patch. A soft patch. The Great Recession, as it's called, was caused entirely by manipulation of home loans. Home loans were made way too readily accessible because of affirmative action plans and government malfeasance to people who could not pay back those loans. Adjustable rates were offered that ensured that over time the loans would become unpaid because the cost of the loans would greatly exceed the borrower's capacity to stay current on those loans. And then loans were not only offered for 100% of the purchase price of a home as opposed to never exceeding 80% previously, requiring the purchaser to have some equity to buy a home. Some loans were written at 105% of the purchase price. On top of all of this, the U.S. government then put into play its own interference in establishing all sorts of rules that would cause a lender who said a individual was not qualified for a loan to be sanctioned, to be fined because of the Fair Housing Act. So banks couldn't turn down lenders for fear of being fined. They were to compete. They were offering adjustable rate mortgages that guaranteed the future default. And they were offering loans in excess of the purchase price of homes, requiring no equity on behalf of the borrower. Well, that was, and then the government approved bundling of loans as derivatives to sell loans, bundle loans as a security. It was a house of cards destined to fail, and it did fail. And then, of course, the federal government blamed business for the collapse and imposed all sorts of additional rules that give it even more power to manipulate the home market, which is the largest industry in America. The reason right now that home sales are failing, that we're continuing to flounder in the home building market, is because the government has seen fit to tell banks that if they offer now loans to those who are unqualified, that they will be fined and that the fines are going to be severe, but they haven't defined the terms of what would be a loan deemed offered to a person who is unqualified. And so it's almost impossible for a person to get a home loan today. If you go in and try to get a home loan, the banks are scared to death that they're going to be fined for offering a home loan to somebody who's not qualified. And so you've got to put that down as much as like 50%. You've got to show that you've had a job with a large solvent corporation for years, and your income has to greatly exceed the amount that would normally be required to show that you're equipped to pay your obligations. And so loans simply aren't getting made. And if loans aren't getting made, home sales can't return to a normal level. All stupid manipulation and interference by the federal government. And so economists who don't bother to find out why home sales are continuing to lag behind have suggested that maybe this is an indication of some fundamental weakness in the market. Maybe it's the unusual cold weather that has dampened activity, they're saying. Maybe we can blame this, too, on climate change. The weak, this is a quote, the weak tone of this report is a bitter pill for those, including ourselves, who have been looking for signs of a spring thaw in the housing recovery, said a TD Securities analyst. So it is like we have absolutely gone stark raving mad and collectively as a nation have lost our minds. We'll return in a moment. A friend sent me an article last week whose dateline is Kansas City, Missouri, CNN. It is an article that I never saw. It was an article that did not make it amongst any lead story of any news reporting agency anywhere in the world. But a man in Kansas City, Missouri, shot over 20 motorists on Kansas City highways. He was firing a 380 pistol at the passing motorists on I-40, 435, I-470, and Highway 71 interchanges in the Kansas City, Missouri area. Man was wearing sunglasses, a dark hoodie, sometimes a ski mask, as he was wielding his 380 at the motorist. Most of his bullets missing the actual motorist, but lodging in their vehicles. I'll bet you never heard of that story. Took place fairly recently. It's within the last month. Early in March, as a matter of fact. How many of you heard of the story? Well, maybe this is the reason. Authorities have now identified the suspect. His name is Mohammed. Do you think that maybe there's a reason we didn't hear of this story? Speaking of stories, another friend sent me a series of pictures with captions. The first picture is of Benghazi. And the caption reads, Benghazi, mortars, rocket-propelled grenades, 50-caliber machine guns, 4 dead Americans. And it's a spontaneous protest to a film. Fort Hood is the next picture. Nidal Hassan screaming, Allahu Akbar, as a jihadist. 100 shots fired, 13 dead, 29 wounded. The caption, an act of workplace violence, according to the United States Army. And then Bundy Ranch, for those of you who are following that story with the in his fight against the U.S. Federal Land Bureau. The issue is grazing rights and toads. 0 shots fired, 0 deaths, 0 injuries. And yet the caption is domestic terrorism. I have not reported on the Bundy Ranch case. I do have a story that I clipped that's buried here in the in my news feeds. But the basic story here is that the Bureau of Land Management wants to restrict land that used to provide grazing for cattle. And the reason they want to restrict it is that the EPA has determined that the cattle, which have been grazing on this land now for 200 years, could endanger a toad. So Bundy is saying, the hell with you. I'm going to graze that anyway. And so the federal government, through its Land Management Bureau, sent out armed goons to stop Bundy, who said, the hell with you. And Bundy got enough supporters around him that finally the Bureau of Land Management had to back down. But it's this, you know, standard stuff where the government wants to impose its will, its dictates over the people. And if you do what you've been free to do for decades, centuries even, if you're at odds with the ever-restrictive U.S. government, then you are a domestic terrorist. Now, as it turns out, Bundy is not exactly the a folk hero material. He was quoted yesterday speaking derogatorily of African Americans. He didn't use the N-word, but he used the basis, the ethnic basis of the N-word, which I don't even know if I can say on this program, so I'm not even going to say the ethnic scientific word that was used for the race, and said, you know, there's a problem with them, and the problem with them is that they just don't work anymore. They sit on their doorsteps. The daddies don't work. The daddies don't even take care of the boys, and went on and on, saying that our, and he didn't use the term African-Americans, but are African-Americans more free or less free than when they were slaves, is his comparison. You know, as he said, as slaves, you know, they at least got a chance to go out and work. But now, as dependents on the government, because they haven't learned to pick cotton, they're now less free than they used to be, Mr. Bundy proclaimed. Sorry, pal. You know, I recognize that the Great Society programs of LBJ failed miserably. That rather than then lifting people out of poverty, they made certain that people would remain dependent on the U.S. government and remain forever in poverty, their character broken. It was a very bad idea that bankrupt the nation and diminished the enthusiasm and the responsibility of individuals to provide for their families. I recognize it was a bad idea and that it was counterproductive. But this notion that African Americans should learn to pick cotton and that that we should go back to the days of slavery, that's disgusting. So I want to tell you, Republicans who have been siding with Mr. Bundy as it relates to making him out to be a folk hero, you want to be real careful here. This man is a racist. This man is really out of touch with reality with regard to his politics and his economic view. So be careful. I was sent by a good friend, longtime listener to this program, really bright fellow. We'll just call him JB for now. Those who know JB know that we co-host an evening show, a Shabbat show, a show that we'll do this Friday, 7:30 Eastern Standard Time in the evening, if you're interested in some Blog Talk Radio. That JB sent me this quote. It was from Henry Kissinger, and I read it. And typically when I read quotes that are this obvious, this blunt, affirming something that I know to be true, I typically say, it's too good to be true. You know, the politicians, diplomats are way too coy to be that blunt. It's what I know they think, but they would never be that blunt. And when he sent me this, that was my initial response. So I began to search for whether or not it was true. The man who said it, I know. I've had dinner with him, a private dinner with him. Talk to him at length. His name is Henry Kissinger, the Secretary of State of the United States during the Nixon and administration and Gerald Ford after him. He's the man, by the way, that decided that Adams for Peace would be a really good idea and had the United States build a nuclear power plant in Iran. And to fuel it, which is the starter fuel and the basis now for the Iranian nuclear bomb project. Anyway, Henry Kissinger said the following. He said that military men are dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns for foreign policy. Let me read that to you again. Henry Kissinger, and he was talking at the time to General Alexander Haig. He said, military men are dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns for foreign policy. Why does anyone in their right mind sign up to serve in the U.S. military? Giving away their freedom to be used as a pawn. But it's obvious that's the reality. It's obvious that's what politicians think. It's obvious that's what diplomats think. It's obvious that that's what the government thinks. Why do you voluntarily subject yourself to being treated as a dumb, stupid animal to be used as a pawn? That's what they think. Henry Kissinger said it. That's only thing that's surprising about this story is A, that he actually said it. We know it to be true, but these guys are usually too clever for that. And that after him saying it, that men and women still relinquish their freedoms to partake in the U.S. military and to be used as dumb, stupid animals. I mean, look at the Vietnam War. It was prolonged so that Richard Nixon could run on an election on a campaign strategy of being the man who would get us out of the war. And yet the war came really close to ending during his first term. And he knowingly, deliberately extended it just to have a better campaign slogan. And proof of this now has been published. It's a story that we'll get to in future days. They were just pawns. What, 57,000 Americans? Pawns? Stupid animals? To be used to die as a pawn for Richard Nixon's re-election? But, you know, it's no better for Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson, there's a recording now at the University of Virginia when his archives were released for the Freedom of Information Act, where Lyndon Johnson is having a discussion with Robert McNamara, the Secretary of Defense, and saying we know that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a lie, that it never occurred. But now that we're in this war, we can't end it because America will never respect a president that surrenders. And so all 57,000 Americans that died in that war died for nothing, for that man's own political ego. Stupid, dumb, animals to be used. That's what they were doing. The proof is ubiquitous. Why do men and women continue to volunteer? Are they demonstrating that they really are as the politicians, as the diplomats have labeled them? What's wrong with us? How dumb? How stupid? How much of a pawn do you have to be to allow diplomats and politicians to use you, to use your sons and daughters in the way that Henry Kissinger has referred, pointedly saying that military men are dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns for foreign policy? And you see that it is played out all the time. George Bush wanted to be a wartime president, so he used the military as a pawn to invade Iraq, making a bad situation much worse. Same thing is true in Afghanistan. Kissinger often took up a post outside the doorway of Alexander Haig's office and addressed him down in front of the secretaries for alleged acts of incompetence with which Haig was not even remotely involved. Once, when the Air Force was authorized to resume bombing of North Vietnam, the planes did not fly on certain days because of bad weather. Kissinger assailed Haig. He complained bitterly that the generals had been screaming for the limits to be taken off, but now that their pilots were afraid to go up in a little fog. The country needed generals who could win battles, Kissinger said, not be good briefers like Haig. The quote, by the way, is in the final days. It's found in a book written by Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein. It's found on chapter 14, page 194, in the paperback version printed in 1995 of the final days. Kissinger would also say that power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. That's why most people run for public office. That's a reality that permeates the life of the likes of Muhammad. He said on another time, Kissinger, I've always acted alone. Americans like that immensely. He said, the illegal we do immediately. The unconstitutional takes us just a little bit longer. He said 90% of the politicians give the other 10% a bad reputation. It's pretty funny, but it's true. He said, we fought a military war, speaking of Vietnam, and our opponents fought a political one. We sought physical attrition. Our opponents aimed at our psychological exhaustion. In the process, we lost sight of one of the cardinal maxims of guerrilla war. The guerrilla wins if he does not lose. The conventional army loses if it does not win. How could we not have learned that lesson? It's so obvious. The North Vietnamese use their forces the way a bullfighter uses his cape to keep us lunging in areas of marginal political importance. Of course, he was right. It's astonishing that we still haven't learned the lessons of Vietnam. I mean, look at the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan. Citizens of both of those two countries, devout Muslims, had us lunging at all manner of capes, and we deployed a very expensive, cost us, what, $4 trillion? Traditional military to go off and fight a religious foe. And we lost. Yes, that was a guerrilla war, and in the midst of a guerrilla war, the guerrilla wins. If the conventional army does not win, and there is no way for a conventional army to win, that's the part that Kissinger didn't get. It's not just the guerrilla wins if he does not lose, it's impossible for a conventional army to win in those kinds of circumstances. No nation is rich enough to spend the kind of money to occupy another country. Because while they occupy another country and are subjected to guerrilla warfare, the attrition in terms of money and manpower is too great, and the benefits never seem to materialize. That's why we lost in Iraq. That's why we have lost in Afghanistan. Why we lost in Vietnam. And yet we continue. Now we're trying to start a war in the Ukraine. For what? Are American troops going to occupy the Ukraine? Because that is a proposition that has no chance of success. Or are we going to go to war against Russia? Another proposition that has no chance of success. Why do we want dependents that are deadbeats? Why is it that we continue to make the same blunder time and time again? Have we as a nation lost the ability to be moral and to think rationally?